Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 243 of Her, the podcast where, well, you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and her alone. What's that about? Oh man, have we got a great show for you. Before we begin, just know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. Hop on over to smartypantsvitamins.com to learn more. Okie dokie, now here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show because I want to hear from you, and that's a command. You heard it. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
So, of course, I'm reading the New York Times, and I come across a title, and it's, I Think We're Alone Now, Welcome. Now, what the hell? And there it was, an article written by writer Glynis McNichol. And it's all about what it's like to basically live alone. I thought, well, now, in the era of COVID, what's all of that about? So I began to grab a little bit more information about Glynis, and in addition to being a star writer, to say the least, it turns out she's become quite the expert on this alone thing. She's the author of the book No One Tells You This, a memoir. And she's, of course, written for the New York Times, the Guardian, The Cut, New York Daily News, and it goes on and on. I absolutely love what she said in this article and wanted to expound on it in the era of the COVID because this is exactly what she was talking about. Glynis, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm telling you right now, I loved the article, okay? I mean, just truth, it was the best. And
thank you.
It was kind of like, okay, well, now I'm like 40, and I live alone without a partner, without the kid thing, and you're thinking to yourself, well, wait a minute now, she's breaking all the damn rules. What's going on here? And now all of a sudden everyone has to be sheltered in place and you can't go out except for essential trips to wherever, the grocer and the pharmacy. And everyone's in shock. Like, how do you do this? I'm alone. And your response was, well, welcome to my world. I've been here all along. Tell me what was going on when you wrote that article.
Well, the interesting thing is the article has actually been in the works since February, and it began as me wondering whether I'd become too good at being alone and a little too self-sufficient for my own good. And then, of course, COVID came along, and we were all, as you say, restricted to our apartments, many people by themselves who weren't used to it, and certainly a level of isolation for everyone. And it felt like this very weird, suddenly being thrust into the middle of a global experience instead of feeling on the periphery of what's recognized as the common experience. I think that despite the numbers showing so many people are choosing to live alone, the stories we tend to tell, particularly about women's lives, still revolve around marriage and motherhood. And so to suddenly feel like you're part of the mainstream was really sort of fascinating to me.
Yeah, I love it. It was really kind of interesting. There's this one paragraph here. This has put me at a particular advantage during the last 3 weeks or three centuries, depending upon how you've experienced time since March, as many of the increasing restrictions being placed on New York City were already in place in my daily life. I've been working from home for nearly a decade. After 15 years in media, I've grown accustomed to facing financial instability and a market that is unreliable and I live alone, so social distancing is the norm when I'm inside. In other words, I didn't have to change much. You know, I remember scratching my head going, now that's very cool. I love the way you put that, you know?
I think a lot of freelancers who work from home initially had a similar experience. We were talking to many friends and we were all like, well, it's not that different. That was early days where it was just sort of like, I don't have to change too much. I think now that we're nearly a month into this, the truth is that the inability to interact with other people is increasingly punishing, particularly for people who are home alone. That the absolute absence of human interaction in real life, the absence just of touch or embrace or anything like that is really tough. And it's made me, and so many people I know who are in a similar position or situation, aware of how much of our lives are about connection and interaction, that it's this sort of incredible. The flip side of the fact that I live by myself is that I interact with so many people on a daily basis, that I'm involved in so many other people's families and lives, and I'm so grateful for that. And of course, that has been completely absent in the last few weeks. You know, if we've discovered anything, it's that FaceTime and Zoom are not, you know, equal to real life.
Yeah, and there's no question about that. You know, it's there's another piece that I think sort of hearkened to your book, your memoir, and that was to be single, as you wrote in this article in the New York Times, and without children after a certain age is to largely disappear off the cultural map. And I've spent the last few years struggling with how best to approach one of the unexpected challenges of my life, the need to create a language around my experiences so that others can understand. In fact, the devastating isolation I've sometimes experienced has almost always been the result of not being understood, of people not believing me when I say I'm happy. Tell us what you mean by all that.
Well, I think there's a couple of answers to that question. One is the ability for women to live on their own and be financially secure outside of marriage is relatively new in the grand scheme of things. An anecdote I always return to in these conversations is the fact that women did not have the ability to have credit cards or bank accounts in their own name until 1974. So the life that I'm living is still relatively new, and culturally we don't see it reflect. I don't see my life reflected in the culture, and that means there's an absence of narrative, there's an absence of ritual. I mean, what is any sort of ritual? It's a celebration of the place you are in your life, your achievements. And I think for women, those rituals are very, very tied to family, be it marriage or motherhood. So with ritual comes language, and with stories come language. So it's very hard for me. People in my life 100% believe me, of course. But when you are talking sort of to a larger audience or people outside of your inner circle to say I'm enjoying myself or I lead a very rich and fulfilling life, there's very little evidence in the world to point to reinforce that. And it can put you in a place of, this has become less so as I get older and I think we become more aware, but of defending your life, which is incredibly frustrating instead of just having people say, you know, congratulations. You know, of course you're having a good time. Why wouldn't you be having an enjoyable, fulfilling life? There's a lot of disbelief. You know, it's just these conversations increase the language around this and the recognition, but it doesn't exist yet as a sort of a common experience that we see.
I love what you say, and I'm really thrilled you also wrote the book, which is fabulous, because I think there needs to be a shift in belief systems? Because you said it's fairly relatively new that women can exist outside of marriage, outside of partnering all over the place, and permanent partnerships, et cetera, and also be financially quite stable and happy with their lives. I think that that's an important piece. Let me ask you a question, Glynis. Now that we've got this whole COVID thing going on, and you are in, newsflash, you know, like the hot spot in the United States, lucky you, in New York City, how is this whole living alone thing potentially changed in your mind or otherwise? Now that we have this kind of put upon us and we have no choice, when, you know, the governor says you're all staying sheltered in place, I mean, you know, no argument here. How does that change this alone thing?
I don't know that I know the answer to that yet. I think we're still very much in the middle of this, and it's a day-to-day thing of trying to get through and trying to help others get through and trying to help the city get through and be as supportive and responsible as possible. I've lived in New York a very long time, and I feel very fortunate still to be here. I do think, broadly speaking, we're all living the most extreme versions of our lives right now. I am living one of the more extreme versions of isolation right now. But I think it's worth reflecting that married people partnered with children are also living the most extreme versions of that right now, that perhaps when you got married and decided to have kids and a full-time job, you were not considering being locked in your home with children and husband 24 hours a day and being responsible for education, work, and childcare all at the same time. Much the same way that when I have made decisions about my life, I was not necessarily considering I would be locked in my studio apartment for days on end without interacting with other people. Like, this is a very, I think this moment is revealing so many things. You know, there's been much discussion about how it's revealing the cracks in the way our healthcare system works, how it's exposing the people who keep things running, who are frequently unrecognized and, you know, not taken care of the way they should be. So I don't know how I feel, if I will feel different about my life on the other side of this. I have plenty of friends with small children who would trade places with me in a heartbeat right now, I'm sure, much the same way that I would be grateful to be in a home with some physical contact. So we're all having different tough times. I think one of the things I was reflecting on in that piece and I was thinking about a lot is just the visibility of my life in terms of isolation was what felt different. Not that it's more difficult or less difficult than others, just that it was suddenly very relatable and required a great deal less explanation on my part than it would have a month ago.
Isn't that interesting? So, you know, are you using social media like a lot more, or how are you kind of doing it? Obviously, no matter who you are, where you are, you know, people are kind of hitting social media one way or the other, I would imagine, just to maintain certain connections, because obviously you can't hang out. But what about you? Like, compared to your normal baseline social media use, where are you now?
Oh, about the same. I've worked in media for a very long time, so my social media use has been solid and sort of a career necessity, sadly, in many cases, for quite some time. I think what's shifted is that I have sort of developed a schedule, might be too strong a word, but a real regular check-in with other people in my life, those who are in similar situations than me, and many friends in my life who are overwhelmed right now trying to take care of their children and work at the same time, that a real determination to have regular phone calls, which is nice. I'm old enough to have grown up with phone calls as opposed to emails. So it's a nice, I feel like I'm channeling my 15-year-old self sometimes when I'm constantly on the phone with people. But just that real awareness of making the effort for connection, that we're all scheduling like weekly check-ins, or I have morning phone calls with certain friends, and really thinking consciously about connecting, as opposed to sort of allowing it to happen happenstance the way we often do in our regular lives, because it happens with such frequency. So that you really have to make it a conscious choice now. And I've done that. And what was interesting, and I think I mentioned in the article, is so many people in my life who this is their first experience with sort of being isolated in any manner immediately started reaching out in a very, I wouldn't say frantic, but slightly frantic way of, my God, I'm alone. I need someone to talk to. And that was interesting, because I certainly have a higher tolerance for it. But just consciously connecting with people, I guess. Instead of unconsciously coupling, it's consciously connecting.
Oh, God, don't go Gwyneth Paltrow on me. Whatever you do.
Gwyneth Paltrow's
please,
very
Lord.
Good at creating language around experience.
I know, seriously.
So
I think the child.
For that.
I know, uncoupling. Oh, my God. Please, just give me strength. You know, what's interesting is in your article, you also mentioned that at one point you picked up some of the symptoms of the COVID virus, you thought, a little cough, mm-hmm. cold, whatever. You didn't have it, apparently.
I don't know. I think it's very likely I did have it. There's no way to know. Yeah.
All right. So who knows? So because once again, weeks into this, we still don't have testing, but that's okay. That's another day, another podcast. So let's just say you got through it. But during mm-hmm. that time, you had some eye openers, you know, and that was this whole thing about, well, you know, suddenly some of those daily phone calls as people were checking in became twice daily. Like, how are you? Are you still there? And then once the symptoms resolved, it's like the frequency maintained at mm-hmm. a higher level. Are you surprised by all that?
No, not at all. And I think the experience was framed against experience in January, which was that I had a breast biopsy and went to have it done and forgot to tell anybody I was going. Required anesthesia, which, as we know, you need someone to come pick you up from the hospital for. And I'm just out of habit, very used to doing things on my own. And so I'd neglected to tell friends. And then I needed to sort of do scurry that morning and find someone who could come up and retrieve me. And that's what sort of developed into my thinking of, well, I've become too self-sufficient. But what is different in this moment from then was that and this goes back to the ritual, I think as strong as friendships are, they're not recognized. I think this might be shifting a bit, but we don't recognize them, I think, for the fundamental role they really do play in all of our lives. And so the asking someone to come, especially when so many friends have small children and kids' schedules to work around, it feels like an ask. And it can sometimes feel like I'm being a nuisance, or it's just so much easier to do on my own. And when my friends found out about this, they were all quite upset with me that I hadn't given them the option to help. And so 6 weeks later, of course, I'm home feeling sick. And because we have this global experience, there's very little asking necessary that we've all, I think when Governor Cuomo during his daily press conferences is advising people to check in to make sure everyone is okay, like it's all front of mind. And so it was really notable to me that I, in this moment, didn't need to even ask anyone for help, that it was just present. And that the awareness of it was there without my having to create it. And then people kept this up. And it's kept up on my end too, because I've now had friends, unfortunately, who've gone through this as well. So it was really just the absence of having to once again explain myself or ask someone for something, which we should never feel shame in doing. But I think sometimes when you're alone, it's not a matter of like, oh, I'm just going to post the appointment on the fridge and obviously someone will come with me. You have to go out of your way to really articulate your needs. And I do think we're all learning that right now in different ways. And that hopefully on the other side of this, that would be one of the positive shifts to come out of this.
I got to tell you, when I read that little piece, you know, in the that section in your New York Times piece about the breast biopsy, you know, I was horrified. You know, I was laughing because so many women, I mean, you know, the minute they hear they have to have a procedure, you know, the alert goes out. All right. Mm-hmm. Which of my 20 friends or maybe all of you should come with me? Right. There it is. And you just, you know, you're like, whatever. And then you just show up and go, oh, damn, someone's supposed to take me home. You know, and I'm
yeah,
like,
I was very like,
seriously. I mean,
yeah, I do. This is the thing, though. I choose my life and I don't mind doing things by myself. But I also felt, I'm sure that this didn't make it through the edits because the subject matter of the article shifted. But I had so, I could have, 100 people would have showed up for me in the moment had I put out the need for it. And I always feel very protective of my friends because they're so good that I never want it to reflect on sort of them, their absence, or that I'm made to feel that they wouldn't want to be there. This is entirely on me, just being so accustomed to doing things on my own, often because I prefer it that way. So yeah, that was really, and that was, but in that moment of getting there and really realizing I did need someone there, that was a real awakening for me. And to see what I experienced in that moment sort of reflected globally 6 weeks later was very obviously unanticipated for all of us, but really it resonated with me probably more than it otherwise would have.
I know. I was just thinking, you know, you get folded into, you know, the group of people out there who say, oh, didn't want to bother you. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. Hi, I just fell down a mountain and broke 16, but I didn't want to bother you. You know, it's one of those just, oh, yes. Well, you know, of course people were going to be there for you, Glynis, and, you know, that's sort of assumed. But I must admit, I was smiling very widely when I think of how many people, like, make it almost an event. It's like an event. You have to be there. And we're all there for our friends. We get the network together. It's the ovarian squad. You know, we all do our thing. And you just totally forgot. You're like, whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. Just going to show up and take care of it. And
it's funny because I had a lot of women email me after that piece came out about that particular anecdote saying they had done similar. And it was striking to me because I think whether or not we individually feel that, there is still shame attached to women on their own. There is a culturally a sense that if you are by yourself, it's because you've done something wrong. And I think while I don't feel that in my life or in the people in my life, I am aware that for a lot of women, having to say, I need someone to come with me is also an acknowledgement of who they feel, who they are made to feel should be there automatically. And that can be hard. That can be hard. You know, in the hospital, the nurses, I was actually at Mount Sinai, which is in this moment, utterly overwhelmed with COVID patients, and their staff is just, you know, working extraordinary hours. And the nurses there were so kind. And one of the nurses said to me, normally people bring someone for emotional support. And I thought to myself, because I was laughing, I was sort of laughing at myself that I hadn't considered this, but I really thought for so many women who might have been in that room alone for whatever reason, how devastating that might have felt. You know, this sense of, well, why don't I, that they were lesser than for not having someone automatically show up. So I am sensitive to people who, unlike myself, just forgot, are in these moments because they do feel a little embarrassed, and they shouldn't, as we are learning right now. It is quite difficult to be by yourself all the time.
Isn't that interesting? This whole issue of, as it were, being by yourself, and the alone factor and the rest of it. I just think it's a fascinating revisit of a very, very important concept, especially as it relates to women, and especially within the context of this global pandemic with the COVID-19, how we're living, how we're sheltering in place, how we're just doing our thing. Everyone out there, we have been talking to Glynis McNichol. She is the author of No One Tells You This, a memoir. And she is really very much an expert on living alone, being completely fulfilled, satisfied, and negotiating and navigating her life in a world of people who are coupled and partnered and maybe don't quite get that. And she and a whole host of people who live like her are beginning to have their voice heard. And I'm just really glad you're such a damn good writer, Glynis, and you're getting your message out there. I mean, this is great. And I know that our Her podcast audience is just loving every moment of this. All right, listen, Glynis. Thank you so much for being on the Her podcast.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. All right. Now, everyone run on over to iTunes right now. That's a command, a demand. And rate and review this show because I personally loved it. I want to know how you feel about it and how you living, how you coping. Are you still there? Please, you know, reach out and connect. Why? Because I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and I want to connect with you. I'm host of the Her Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Hey, thanks for listening today. Stay safe and stay well.